I tell my inner child I'm sorry for everything you had to go through. It started as a child. I wish that I was stronger in situations that I had to go through. I'm trying to press it now.
Hey, you guys, it's Entute, the host of Talks with Two, and we are back with another episode, the second episode of our Chicago edition series. I'm glad to be in another city, sitting down to talk. And today I got another special guest, Miss Vicky Willis. How you doing today?
I am blessed and highly favored.
Thank you for coming to sit down and talking with me today. So can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
I am a grandmother of one and a mother of two. I'm a retired teacher and I run my own business now.
Okay. So can you just speak on your upbringing?
Yes, I am from Chicago. I was born here, but I was raised in other states, and I relocated back to Chicago after college. Went to Bloomfield College in New Jersey, and then I came here. I relocated back to Chicago in 2003, where I was hired to work for Chicago Public Schools.
All right. And can you share your experiences working, you know, in the Chicago school system?
It was very interesting. It was the best job of my life. I worked for two schools, which is not the typical teacher on the south side. And then my last school was at the juvenile detention center.
Okay. So what grades did you teach?
Oh, baby, only high school.
Only high school?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. As a former Chicago public school teacher, what challenges did you observe among students?
Their mental health.
And yeah. What are the kind of mental health challenges that you've seen?
Post-traumatic stress disorder.
Mm.
A lot of that. Physical abuse, psychological abuse, mental abuse, spiritual abuse. Yeah, it kind of ran the gamut with our students. They needed a lot of support.
Okay. And like as far as support goes, you know, what kind of support did, you know, the school system, you or anybody offer the students?
For me, it was a listening ear because I'm not a licensed therapist. Mm-hmm. The other problem I saw was the fact that we just don't have enough counselors in our system. The 20 years that I was with Chicago Public Schools, they started firing people or laying them off or closing the positions out. And I'm like, these kids need somebody to talk to.
Right.
And then they started putting it where you had like, we used to have like the guidance counselor was there all day, but then the guidance counselor is overwhelmed. They have like 500, 600, 700 kids. You know, how do you do thorough help with that? You get the kid for 10 minutes and then what, they go back to lunch, they go back to the trauma. The other thing is hiring people that don't understand your culture, you know, and the community. So you have people who don't look like you, didn't grow up, don't have any of your background experiences. They don't understand your kind of church. They don't understand anything about your culture, but they're down there in your school. And then they come with their own preconceived notions. A lot of people, what I noticed too, were with the faculty, and I'm not trying to be critical. I just state facts because I taught history. They just came with this, missionary complex, but not with any missionary complex true solutions.
Right.
And then we had a lot of counselors, like I said, I was trying to say they were either laid off or they closed the positions out. We had a lot of turnover with who actually ran the Board of Education. They weren't paying attention to what the staff needed. I myself had at least 60 children who lost their lives for various reasons. That's traumatic for teachers. I had one student in Saturday school who died in front of me, died in my arms. So it's a lot. My kids, the 2000, from 2004 to like 2010, they were closing down those schools in Black communities, specifically on the South Side and West Side, in that Renaissance 2010. So you had students who were coming from what we call here over east,
mm-hmm.
where I live now, and they were going all the way west, all the way to Pulaski. So they were crossing territory. And it wasn't until I took the bus myself when I lost my vehicle, because I just wasn't paying what they asked for. I was taking the 79th Street bus,
mm-hmm.
From 79th and Pulaski all the way to the lakefront, because I live in South Shore. And my God, my God, my God, the things that these kids were seeing, it explained a lot to me why my students were coming to school hungry, why they were coming to school angry. And then I discovered through personal experiences that 79th Street, especially during that time, from Damon to Elise Cottage Grove, was called Murder Row. And it was called that for a reason. And I saw firsthand why.
Okay, and when you mentioned that you had about, 60 students, passing away during this time, mm-hmm. what were some of the reasons that, the causes?
I'm not going to say gang violence. I'm going to say they die because they were shot.
Right.
The other percentage that they do not speak on here is they committed suicide.
Mm. So the one that you had said, had passed away in your arms, what was that reason?
He was murdered at Simeon High School.
Okay.
He died 3 feet from my car.
And witnessing all of these deaths, how did that impact your mental health?
I didn't want to go back to school because I didn't want to go back to work. I said, what the F is the purpose if they're just going to die on me? The Board of Education sent a therapist to talk to me. Mm-hmm. They sent lawyers. They wanted to know if I wanted to be involved in the case. What happened with Chavez Clark. And I told them no, I wanted to remain silent. And so they just went with the other teacher, the substitute teacher who was in the parking lot that day. But there was just two of us in the parking lot that day. And I was the one that I asked to be, I don't want my name in the papers.
Right. So what some things, did you see anything improved after this? Or this stuff just kept on going?
It's still here. They downplay it. They downplay what happens out at Morgan Park, they downplay it, or they just focus in on, they try to reroute and rewrite the stories, but it's not changed. It's just new leadership.
Okay. And, so are there any violence prevention? Is there any violence prevention in Chicago? What's some support groups or, that can help? That you feel like that can help?
That's a loaded question, and I'm going to give my honest answer on that. The violence prevention, my opinion, would be to bring back those programs that they took out. It would mm-hmm. be to bring back the community centers that they took out. It mm-hmm. would be to bring back the jobs that they took away.
Right.
Because our youth here in Chicago, they don't have employment. There's also the education. It's just a push you through the system, but not really right. training you or teaching you what you need to know. They don't have auto shop. They don't have all of those programs that they used to have. They don't have home economics. These mm-hmm. kids are, you have to go to one or two or three schools just to even learn how to be a mechanic. You have to go to Simeon just to learn how to be a chef. So how do you have 500 people applying for 100 seats? That's not moral or ethical. But that's what I think they should do. I think they should bring back the community centers. And I think that these organizations, and I'm throwing shade here, and I don't care because I did my time in the trenches. These community organizations who say that they're helping these people and they're using these kids to get their grants from the federal government or from the state government, you really need to get up there and get out there and help these kids.
Right. So what was the cause of them taking the community centers out?
That's a good question. Politics. Mm. Politicians who make $100,000+ a year but don't actually do anything for their communities, and otherwise known as aldermen.
Wow.
They all need to be voted out.
So what I'm hearing is, around the city, it's not that many organizations or people that are in politics that's really stepping down and helping the community.
No, they're not helping the community. They're only doing it in kind and face.
Right, for an image.
For an image, right, because that's how they get their grants.
Right, mm-hmm. right. So you are an advocate for medical civil rights, right?
Yes, I am one of the faces of impacted families, and mm-hmm. I'm grateful. For being introduced. So I'm grateful that Miss Maggie Carr, who is a descendant, she's a relative of Emmett Till. Mm-hmm. I met her the day that Holy Spirit told me to go and stand outside wherever follow the mayor. And I was like, I said, God, I can't go just follow the mayor because I'm not trying to get arrested. I'm just trying to bring attention to what's going on with my son. And so he told me to go follow the mayor, and I ended up at the church where they actually laid Emmett Till's body out when he came from Mississippi to Chicago. Mm-hmm. And when I was standing out there, I ran into Maggie Carter, and then she introduced me to another person who introduced me to the Medical Civil Rights Initiative, which is run by Leonore Dulley and her mother, Deborah.
Okay. So you spoke on your son. So what happened to your son?
That's a damn good question. My son died because people are lazy. Altarik, he would be 30 years old in January. He would only be 30. He died because somebody thought that his life wasn't important enough to get up and check on him. So now you see this rash of at Cook County Jail. Oh, we're busting people who are bringing in drugs. My son was there. 36 hours. He didn't even have mail. He didn't have a visitor. Something happened to my boy, and it took me 16 months to even get a video. They block you when something happens to your family behind bars, which is the other reason why I joined the medical civil rights group. Because it's one thing to have your people shot on police body camera. And I'm not saying that their deaths are any less important, because we just had a baby that died, and he's not black, he's white. In Indiana, he was having a grand mal seizure, and the police put him in handcuffs, because these individuals, they're not medically trained, and they don't know who's lying and who's not lying. But my son, Altarik Pleasant, was arrested on July 19th of 2022 for failure to appear in court on a case that he was fighting. And he called the police for assistance because someone else was threatening him downtown on State and Lake Street with a knife. And so they did something to Al before he got there, because his body showed that. But something happened to my son on July 20th, and they declared him dead on August 2nd of 2022, and I didn't know anything about any of that until they declared my son dead. So I saw him as his soul was leaving his body on August 3rd in the morning. There are a lot of people who are held inside of Cook County Jail, and I've been interviewed by a few small-time reporters, and I was able to come up with the same information that the last reporter told me, which is about 275 people have lost their lives inside of Cook County Jail under suspicious or mysterious circumstances, often labeled as a drug overdose. And so I challenged Thomas Dart and Tony Preckwinkle, who have been in power for 30 years, as to why in a freakity frack are people still dying inside of jail. And my son was not in general population. He was in the mental health ward, which cost the city of Chicago $100 million, 10 feet from a guard.
So, so can you explain the, okay, so he went to jail for a failure to appear.
Mm-hmm.
And then between the time that he was found, you know, dead, what occurred and what was supposed to, you know, occur in between that time? So getting arrested, like, what was the time frame of everything like?
Around 36 hours. Al was, he wasn't even brought to Cook County Jail until 19 hours later, which is not standard police procedure, but that's a different topic. Somebody gave my son something, and it took his life.
In jail.
And his body was in rigor mortis.
What does that mean?
That means that he was blue and he wasn't breathing anymore. He'd already foamed out at the mouth. And there are some discrepancies in the time frame from when the call was made to when the ambulance actually arrived to the services that they gave him to when they took him to Mount Sinai Hospital, where he was never tested for drugs. There was no drugs, you know, in a system other than the drugs that they give you when you are on life support, and then they take you off of life support. But there's no laws here in Illinois or in the nation for medical civil rights. And so what I've found is that whether your people are shot outside or tortured or whatever the situation is, they're not getting proper medical treatment. And my son did not get any proper medical treatment. He laid there dead on his cot for 3.5 hours before somebody decided to call paramedics for him, where they restarted his heart.
And you said that he was in the mental part of jail. So what led him to go to the mental part?
Al-Tariq was a frequent flyer, because most people with mental health issues typically are. They have a lot of contact with law enforcement, and law enforcement simply is not, they don't have the capacity to help them. They don't know how to talk anybody down from suicide. A lot of these individuals are not actually threatening the police. They are just threatened. They are triggered themselves. Mm-hmm. My son, the time that he was murdered, and I'm going to say murdered, because when you don't give anybody proper medical treatment, you're murdering them. My son was known to have mental health issues. So they don't, when they process you at Cook County, they don't just go stick you over here when they know that you've been here before and you go over there. And so Al never went into general. He was always where he was supposed to get the most support, according to Thomas Dart.
Wow.
Yeah. The medical civil rights would really actually affect 70 million people if we were to put it in law. It has to pass state by state in order for it to get to the U.S. Supreme Court. And that's my goal. And that's what I'm here for. I'm here to tell people that we need medical civil rights, because you could even be a person who, like my son, call police to help you and something happens. You could be having a heart attack. You could be having a stroke. You could be having an asthma attack. The police are not held accountable if they don't call medical services for you.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy.
Yes, it is.
That's crazy. So how has the, well, let's just talk about the grieving mental health part of losing your son. How has that been for
I'm
you?
Not right. At all. It's taken everything for me just to get up in the morning. But I thank God for having and growing up with a very religiously devout family, Church of God in Christ. My ancestors' names are actually on the Mother's Church in Lexington, Mississippi. They helped Bishop Mason turn that church into what it is. My grandmother actually went to All Saints Industrial. And so if I didn't have that and their support and my mother's support, may she rest in peace, Sandra Taylor, I probably wouldn't be here right now. But I have to get up every day and I advocate for people like my son who are no longer here to speak. I'm grateful for meeting Leonore and Selwyn, who's George Floyd's uncle. I'm in a bad club, right? The Impacted Families Club. But they're very supportive people. We do grief counseling once a week. I've been working with Marcel Bridges with the Building Bridges Florida. He is actually out of Jackson, Mississippi, and they are him and Malik Shabazz, who is the attorney. They have been able to successfully get convictions for 6 police officers. Who were down there torturing people in Jackson. So I'm going to say that God will redirect your path. Because like I just wanted to be like the Black Bed Bath & Beyond, make these candles and make people's houses smell good. And now I'm out, flying out to Boston, speaking in Senates and speaking at city councils to try to get people to understand that it's not about race. Because when I went to Boston, I heard some terrible stories. It's not about social class, because I've met people whose family members were very wealthy and they were not given any medical treatment. It's about humanity and human rights.
Right. So can you elaborate on, I know we probably already hit on some of these things, but focusing just on this, can you elaborate on the issues that you see within the system and how they contribute to the tragedies faced by individuals like your son?
I'm going to read a little bit right here because I wanted to make sure that when I came that I was going to hit the stuff I wanted to hit. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to read. This is not inauthentic. It's just making sure I stick with the facts. Deaths like my son, Al Tariq, are not uncommon, and many of them are entirely preventable. I was talking about this yesterday at another meeting. According to the authors of the Medical Civil Rights Act, every year, approximately 70 million persons lack a right by law to emergency medical care during law enforcement interactions. Without key legal protections, 7,000 people die in custody every year. According to a 2024 Department of Justice OIG report, they found that nearly half of the inmates' deaths reviewed involved insufficient emergency medical responses. According to the National Research Council 2013, lower-income individuals who are held in custody are least likely to receive prompt, quality medical care compared to their counterparts. Disparities in access to health care have people are dying and they're suffering. There was a bishop, he was a deacon in Georgia. He was having an asthma attack. They put him in handcuffs and tased him. I was looking at Miss Danetta Carr's son. He actually didn't even know he had sickle cell, and they handcuffed him. They'd put him in this police paddy wagon thing. By the time they made it to the police station, this young man was actually dying. They dragged him out, threw him in a wheelchair. His video was online. I watched it yesterday. It was the most horrific thing I'd ever seen. He's literally begging 14 times, "I can't breathe. Please help me. Please take me to the hospital." They throw him in a cell. They tackle him. He was literally bleeding from his mouth. And he's telling them, "I can't breathe." What we're familiar with is the incidences like George Floyd or Tamir Rice or Tyree Nichols. What we don't see in the people like me, whose people, you know, our loved ones die inside, it's a whole nother beast, because our people are property of the state. And the state does not feel obligated to give you FOID information. I had to go through, an investigative reporter. I can't think of their company right now. Something Just Injustice, the Injustice Network. And they're the ones, through their lawyer, who was able to get me half of the stuff of what happened to my son. And a lot of the information, like Leonora was she was reading it for me the other day, and she said, "Vicki, the medical emergency response, that information doesn't look right. The Chicago Fire Department wrote this, but if you look over here to that," and she was sending me things, and she said, "Vicki, this doesn't align." And I said, "I know, and I'm pretty sure that there's other families like myself here in Chicago and around the nation. We just don't know what to do. You don't know who to call. You try to reach out for the grassroots organizations, and you're like, am I getting an activist or an actorvist?"
And what's the difference between the two?
Well, the activists, like Lynetta Thomas, who's been helping me and trying to open doors for me, is there, right? She's doing things. She's pointing things out to me. Leonore is an activist, right? Even though she's on the medical, but she's actively doing things, and she's not in front. She doesn't want people to focus on her. But the activist, well, they're at every single news outlet. They're putting their hands all over the grieving mothers. They're taking the pictures of yourself crying because you're in grief, and they're getting their grants with your name, but they're not helping us. There's several organizations here that have my face in their file and my son's face in their file, but they've never picked up the phone. And it's not that I haven't reached out, because maybe I didn't call everybody from Kamala Harris, all the way down to my alderman about my son. And not just about my son. I'm not here just for Al Tariq. I'm here for the 375 people that died. And we had like 10 more this year in Cook County Jail. And Cook County Jail is one of the largest jails in the nation, I can only imagine what's going on in New York or L.A. or Miami.
So I seen the news clip when you had spoke about what happened to your son. So I guess my question would be, I think that was like a 30-second clip that I had seen. Were you talking for longer than that? For 30 seconds?
If I talked longer than 30 seconds on the news, that would be amazing, because I often start crying because my heart is broken. My heart is broken. And there's no mending that. The only way that I can feel effective is to do what I'm doing.
Right.
This opportunity that you've given me,
mm-hmm.
That Leonore has given me, and I don't have a bunch of people helping me. I'm right. outside. If you see me standing outside, I'm outside the mayor's office downstairs. I've been standing on Michigan Avenue, Wabash, Wacker, with my son's sign, because I know that I'm not the only family, but people are afraid to speak up. Right. I'm not afraid because they killed my son already.
Right.
So I don't have anything else to lose.
Have you connected to any other families that may have lost a loved one in Cook County as well?
No. The individual who was supposed to be doing that didn't do that. So here I am.
Right.
Me, my angels, and me. Because right. sometimes all you can do is stand.
Right.
And I mean, like my mother said before she passed, she said, God will put you in the places that you need to be in.
Right.
And here I am right now doing this interview with you.
Right. I really appreciate you coming on here talking about a very sensitive topic, but it definitely needs to be talked about. So do you have any support systems that you do believe are essential for families who have lost loved ones to violence or, you know, failures within the justice system?
Yes, I would definitely say to get in contact with the Medical Civil Rights Initiative. They are located in Massachusetts, and we are currently trying to get this passed in the state of Massachusetts. It's already passed in Connecticut. We did not come out of the Judiciary Committee in the spring, and that was really devastating because I flew out there. Myself and about 25 other families were out there to speak, and the Boston News and Globe and all those people were interviewing us. We need it here in Illinois. I think that Illinois would be a phenomenal state, a phenomenal place to pass it, because if Illinois passes it, Lynetta wrote the Al Tariq Pleasant Law, which is to go a little bit above and beyond We just passed a law in Illinois to end cash bails, and I can't think of it. Anyway, the point is, I don't have many. Building bridges with Marcel and, from Jackson, Selwyn, Jones, who's George Floyd's uncle. He's also been trying to, you know, get me connections with people, get me to sit down. But it's pretty much been me and my mom before she died, calling folks. Right.
And did your son pass away while she was here?
Yeah, my son passed in August of 2022. My mother mm-hmm. just passed July of 2024.
And was he your only child?
No, he's not my only child. God only gave me two children.
Okay, and you have another son or a daughter?
I have a son.
So how has that affected, you know, the mental health of his brother?
He's in therapy now.
And how is that working out for him?
He's able to get up every day and go to work. But he is, it's been a lot for both of us because we had three deaths in 2 years. My grandmother, who he was close to. I'm glad you asked that question. Thank you. My mother, well, his brother, which brought him from having somebody to talk to being by himself. And then his grandmother, these are the closest people that he had in his life. And so, it destroyed him. But I thank God that he's, I don't know if you guys are the new millennials or the old millennials. I guess it just depends on when you were born. But I thank God that all of you young people out there have the sense, more than us Generation Xers, to go and get therapy and know that it's there and it's not a stigmatism. It's not saying that you're, you know, that you're bad or you can't do things or whatever. But you all, you millennials, y'all are on it. And I just want to give a shout out to all of you who know that this is real and that it needs to be changed, especially in the African American, Black, Indigenous, Hebrew, Moor community.
Right. And not only the, you know, Black community, but, you know, men. Because I think you're like the third female that I've interviewed since I started doing these interviews, but the first three episodes were men. And one thing we talked about was being vulnerable and opening up, opening up the path for them to go to therapy and for them to let others know that it's okay. So I know, like, sometimes us women, it's easier for us, but men are definitely taught that that's a level of weakness, you know.
Yeah, I think that my son's slightly different in just the aspect that his brother has documented mental health issues.
Mm-hmm.
And so he grew up in a situation where he knew that we were doing family therapy because it was beneficial to Al and it was beneficial to us. I had a judge who actually wrote an order for me to have, we could do it as a family. And then I had my own sessions privately. Mm-hmm. And I looked at her and she said, no, to raise a child with the things that you've been going through with him, just to make sure that he's okay and he's a productive citizen in the United States,
mm-hmm.
has got to put some stress on you. And I said, you know, I mean, I wasn't objective to it, but I said, she's right, because we as Black women, those of us who identify as Black, right, we're told to be strong.
Right.
And it's like, no, it's okay for me to cry.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay for me to feel sad. And so when you ask me, like, how have you been doing? Like, no. I was mad at God for a year. It took me until August 1st of 2023 to stop being angry at God for Al not being here. Because Al, he changed my life. He made me a mother. He was my biggest cheerleader. He called me every day at 6 o'clock. Get up, old lady. What are you doing? Mom, did you pray today? I don't have that. I miss him so bad. I can't even. They say it gets better. I cry about my son every day. Every day. I can't have conversations with him about the cosmos. I can't go with him to the museums. I can't travel with him. I can't do any of those things with him anymore. And the most horrific thing for a parent is to bury their child.
Right.
So I have to get up, because I was his advocate in life. If I wasn't at his court hearing, anytime he was ever arrested, it was only because he never, he didn't tell me. Didn't mean that I wasn't tracking down the public defender and asking questions, because this was my child. I almost died having this boy. His name is Al-Tariq, and it means the pathway to God. His middle name is Murad, and it means wanted and desired. Thank you. His second name is Angeline, which is my name, because I said whatever I had, that child was going to have my middle name to keep it in my family. So he made six generations of Angeline.
Right.
His last name was Pleasant, even though sometimes he was a terror. But that's what happens when you have mental health issues. To be Black in America is to have a certain amount of mental health, because you're followed around, you're taunted, your entire culture is looked down upon, but replicated and mimicked across the world.
And could you name the mental health issues that he was facing?
L was at times a manic depressant.
What's that?
Where he just didn't value himself. And it's hard because he had been in and out of the juvenile detention center. Mm-hmm. He was at Joliet where they beat him and sexually did things to my son. He was in St. Charles. He was in Kewaunee. I was there every step of the way. There were times he was in Joliet and they wouldn't even let me see him. And I used to take a bus to the train because his visitation days are on Sunday to Joliet to get off the bus. Once you got to the train, you had to take the train, get off the train, take a bus, walk about half a mile or a mile from the main road to the facility for them to tell me that I couldn't see my boy, to turn back around and do the same thing and come back next Sunday because he was my son. And no matter what his sexuality was, he wrestled with that. Al would never tell you he was gay. He dated transgenders. Mm-hmm. I didn't care.
Right.
Because he's my son.
And I feel like a lot of parents need to definitely have that type of energy when it comes
it's my
to
son.
That.
It's my son. I did say in the beginning, our family helped to create the Church of God in Christ. And everybody wasn't comfortable with that because that was my boy.
Right.
And I almost died. And God gave him to me. So I love him. I love him as much in death as in life.
Right. And just like off of this interview, I see you have a lot of resilience, and he was definitely, he's your why. He's part of your why.
Yeah. Well, his name is Al Tariq, right? And mm-hmm. it means the pathway to God. So I said, in his death, if I was straying somewhere, it definitely brought me back and opened me up. And you can't tell me that God isn't real.
Right. So, before we close the interview, is there any topics that you wanted to discuss that we haven't hit on yet? Like anything that you want to say before we close?
I think that voting is necessary, and I want to put that out there. And I'm not talking about the presidential election at all. I'm talking about the president that's over your state, your governor, your lieutenant governor. You need to be looking at who your judges are. You need to be looking at who your police superintendent is. We need to be able, especially in the city of Chicago, we need to be able to remove police superintendents. We need to be able to remove police officers. We need to be more active. So I would definitely challenge the 20, the 30, and the 40-year-olds, because I'm in my 50s. Mm-hmm. You all need to get out there, and you need to get involved in your community, because we're dying out. And if you don't change it. Amen.
So as we close, what are your hopes for the future regarding the treatment of individuals within the prison system and the overall approach to violence in communities like Chicago?
We need to take the prison system and not make it privatized, because these are corporations.
Right.
Who are benefiting off of humans. And the conditions are deplorable. There are people in there who have multiple sclerosis and they cannot feed themselves. There are people in there who are being beaten. There are elderly people in there who need to be released. Mm-hmm. I think our criminal justice system needs an overhaul, and like immediately. There are other countries where we can see where there's actual rehabilitation that does not actually happen here in America. And I don't know. I just feel like God himself is going to have to come down and rearrange some things for people to understand that we need a reset.
Right. And so what advice can you give to a mother who's lost her son in a system, families that's lost loved ones that want to get out here and, you know, go hard and fight for their loved ones or just for people who's been through anything that you have been through, what advice can you give to them?
Don't stop. Call every number. That's what I did. Stand up. You know, no one's coming to save you. You got to save yourself. Reach out to the Medical Civil Rights Initiative in Massachusetts, Building Bridges out of Florida. Mm-hmm. Here in Illinois, the Altariq Pleasant Foundation, mm-hmm. So that people in the central regions have a focal point. I'm here. You need to know that you only have 2 years in most states for a wrongful death. You need to know the process for FOID, and you need to keep filing. Also, get in contact with some investigative reporters who are not afraid to do the digging for you.
All right. And last, where can our listeners keep up with everything that you have going on, support everything that you have going on? Can you drop your social media?
Okay. It's funny you said that. I'm not trying to laugh, but I'm laughing because I just did that meta verification thing and I was like perplexed because my cipher flower, you can't have that on Instagram. You have to go by whatever's on your ID. So on my Instagram, I'm Vicky Willis. Mm-hmm. On my Facebook is Cipher Flower. I have 28,000 followers because people, they imitate me because of my gifts.
Right.
And if you look on my social media, you'll understand what I'm talking about. What does the Kendrick Lamar say in the beginning of his song? I see dead people. So
spiritual.
Yes, very much. I'm a medium. I'm not a trance medium.
I might need to get in touch with you. I'm clairvoyant.
Ooh. Yes, like a mug. So that's why people started following me. I got a large following off of Jelani Day because I saw his face and I said where they were going to find his body, and that's where they found his body. Mm-hmm. But I went to Illinois State University. I got my master's from there. So when I saw his name, I said, what? Because nothing happens to us downstate. And then I found out about all the lynchings downstate.
Right.
So my social media and my website is cypherflower.com. But Al Tariq stuff is all in his name, altariqpleasant.com. I'm on all the platforms. If I haven't updated, that's just because I've been doing interviews.
All right, so guys, y'all hear that? Make sure you go tap into everything that she has going on. I really appreciate you coming to sit down and giving me your time of day to speak on your situation. So we're going to make sure we drop all of her links so you guys can go tap in. And make sure you tune in, subscribe to our YouTube, Talks with Two on all platforms and on YouTube. That'd be a wrap. Thank you.
Thank you.
Tell my inner channel, sorry for everything you had to go through. It started as a child. I wish that I was stronger in situations that I had to go through. I'm trying to press it now.